Welcome to the Redneck Country Podcast, where we hope to learn by sitting around the campfire and just sharing some stories.
I was waiting. I'm holding my breath this whole time because you didn't spoiler alert it, but I'm going,
did he actually get this one?
3 yards is not a long shot, just in case anybody's running home.
Hey folks, welcome to the Redneck Country Podcast. We again are on with Bill Tom. Bill, are you there?
Good evening, everybody. How it goes tonight?
It goes good. And we got Scotty Goodall. Scott, are you there?
I'm here. As always.
And again, the patriarch of Redneck Country. Dad, are you there?
I'm here.
He's here. Well, this week, I'm not going to say much about it, but we are now like, what, week three of the quarantine. And so I have not shaved. I have not had a haircut because obviously I'm not going out. And I have now got a beach ball. I'm fixing to start hanging with Tom Hanks and talking to it. No, it's a volleyball. Volleyball. I got some kind of ball I'm about to paint a face on.
We'll see. Yeah, I think there's going to be some definite crazy things happen over the next little while. But I just got notification today that the first two trap ATA shoots that I was going to do are canceled. So
canceled. Yep. Canceled. Is what it is, I guess. But. Yeah.
Guess all I can do is stick to the dry fire drills, which I did tonight, by the way.
Yawn. And Dad, how are you holding up?
Oh, fabulous. Your girls are keeping me busy. Days go by like spook.
Yeah. I should say I have the volleyball, but I really don't need it. I got mom and dad and the kids are all home here. I'm trying to do some stuff, and I'll tell you, it's chaos. They're playing dice and cards, and mom's got the news on the channel, on the TV upstairs. But anyway,
teaching them any new card games?
I don't know. I just know I can hear every now and then my oldest yell at the top of her lungs when she beats Grandpa. So I know when she's winning, and it's pretty quiet when she's not.
Today I put her down today in dice. She went down badly.
Yeah, Grandpa's teaching no participation awards.
No, you got to keep honest like that. There's no points for second place.
Well, she's got an ego like mine, so it's not bad for her to lose from time to time. Keep that in check.
Knock her down a notch or two. Good job, Grandpa. Good job.
All right. Well, I think last week we talked about some of the stories that with turkey hunting pretty much and some of the stories that you wouldn't believe happened. And I've got a few more to share. I think we carry on that theory, carry on that theme.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Who wants to go first? Who's got a story? Not everybody jump in at once. You go. Who wants to? I'll go first. Who went first last week?
I think that's a good idea. Your dad went first last week, and I went. So I think you need to go first to kick us off because I'm sure you got a couple that you.
I got
this with you.
I got a bunch, but I'm going to share two because they happened in the same woods area, and kind of both involved my dad, and really it was kind of wicked. So the first one, we're going way back. I don't even know how many years ago we're going. Maybe 20. And you could only hunt turkeys till noon. The legalities was at noon, you had to pack it in. You could not hunt them past noon. They were still trying to build up the population. And hey, who knew how well that would go, huh? But they were trying to build up the population in our area. And so you could only hunt till noon. And so
only
we'd
one
go
tag back then too.
Sorry, what's that, Bill?
Was it only one tag back then too?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I think so. I don't remember. Dad, do you remember if it was only one tag back then or were you allowed two?
Yeah, I don't know. It might have been just one. I'm not sure.
I can't remember. Concussions. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
It's been a long time. Yeah.
but yeah, you could only hunt till noon. So we went out and we just had the two decoys. We had the one with a string. It was a full body hen, and the feet. It actually had a feet and a base, and you staked the base down into the ground with big stakes. And then we had a little Jake. It was like a little foam Jake. It wasn't anything like an avian with high detail. And which, cause avian wasn't around at that point, I don't believe. So we sat in the edge of this field because that's how we knew how to turkey hunt, and put a little blind around us. And we had some pine trees, or I believe there are pine trees, and the branches came right down over our heads. So we were pretty covered up in there pretty good. And we sat there and we'd call every now and then all morning and maybe heard some gobbles. I don't remember that whole part, but never got a turkey close enough, maybe some hens. And so it got to be a quarter after 11. And we'd been there since first light, so it'd been a long sit. But you could only hunt till noon, so it almost made you hunt longer, because you're like, yeah, we only could hunt till noon. I had to put the time in where you couldn't go out at night or anything like that till 7. And so it was probably quarter after 11, and Dad said, well, that's it. We got to drive. We would drive 45 minutes to this spot from our place. And he said, well, we got to drive. Might as well pack it in and get going. Said, all right. So we start going. Well, as we're walking out, I'm winding up the line that bobs that hen's neck. And we had that hen out there at 40 yards, and we'd put the Jake at 15 with the theory that the Tom, being territorial, would see the hen and come in and want to beat up the Jake and come real close. So I'm walking out and winding that up, and Dad walks out and picks up the Jake, and he's standing out there. Well, as I'm winding it up, he's walking with me a bit, and I get to the hen and I pick up the hen and I look over probably 150 yards over on the fence, or maybe even further, maybe 200 plus yards. Dad, do you remember how far it was? I know it was a long ways.
Yeah, it was a couple hundred yards.
So I look over on the fence and there's a turkey. That's a big turkey. That looks like a big Tom. And we just froze. Well, the field kind of rolled down into the corner we were in, and like from that fence row, it went on a downgrade just slightly. Well, next thing I know, as we're both just standing there staring at it going, this is just great. They're the only turkey we've seen all morning, and there it is standing on the fence row. Well, next thing I know, it is full blown, neck stretched out, hauling at us. Like it is moving and running right at us. And what do we do? And so we had time, because I mean, it was 200 yards away, but it was cruising. I said, Dad says, let's go, get back to you. Cause we left our guns under the overhang and branches under the pine trees down. And so we start running. Well, Dad says, put the decoy back in the ground, put it. And so he's the first one to the branch. So I turned around at about 20 yards and stuck the decoy back in the ground and kept on moving my butt. We got under that tree and that Tom full on, we watched it finish running, and it got to 70 yards and stopped dead, and then stood up there, and it was up on a knoll now, because we went, like I said, that field gradually faded down. And so we're down and it's up on this knoll and it can see it, but it isn't coming any closer than that hen. And it got to 20 minutes and this thing's just pacing back and forth, not getting any closer and still pacing. And so for whatever reason, it would not close the gap, and it got to be that. It's now 10 to 12. We literally have 10 minutes to close this. So we sat there waiting. Well, then it all of a sudden started to just, it would be puffing up and then unpuffing and puffing up and unpuffing and not, we were calling, doing everything we could, would not come any closer. Finally, it just started to walk away. Well, Dad put the gun up and pulled the trigger. But by then it was, 70 plus yards. And at the time we were using 2 3/4 inch load that there was no way it was reaching out and touching it. And it just, once Dad took the shot, it started to run and then took off and flew. But the unbelievable part for me was when we got out there and we're holding these decoys and this thing looks at us and like, Dad, that's a turkey. And then next thing, it is full blown running at us. And so we got talking that my theory, we both had leafy suits, right? That you put on and the leaves kind of blow a little bit, like the ghillie suits, but not like the Army Ranger ghillie suits. It was just like leafs. And so I figure we blended in with the trees, and because of the way that field kind of sunk down to where we were, it just looked like I was holding a hen, and it was a full body. It just looked to him like there's a hen. So
it's unbelievable that it didn't catch your movement as you were running to the decoy.
Yeah, well, and then I don't know if we disappeared behind that knoll a bit for it.
Yeah, like once we disappeared down the knoll. And then it occurred to me we were still carrying the decoy, and that was a big mistake.
Yeah.
We should have took that decoy right to the woods with us, and if anything, stuck it in the ground right where we dove in under the pine trees, because I figure that's what hung it up.
That would have brought it in.
By the time it got to the top of the knoll and saw that decoy, it wanted the decoy to come to it. And if we'd have took that decoy with us, I think it probably would have come within gun range. But we were green. I didn't even have a turkey yet this time. I hadn't even shot my first turkey on this day yet.
You hadn't even shot your first turkey yet.
No, no. The next story is, I think you're going to tell, is my first.
Well, time. Yeah. So then, I mean, it's a week later or whatever, and we go back to the same spot, the same woods, and I had already shot one. And so this was time, and that's why Dad took that shot on him taking off. It was Dad's turn to get one. When we sit together, we take turns. And so we went back and we sat in that same, but we didn't sit way back in that corner. We same side of the field, same field and same edge of the woods, but we sat up closer to that fence row we had learned. And we sat there all morning, and I don't think we seen a turkey that morning either. We were pretty green, but I don't think we seen a turkey that morning. But we had a tent also, because it was raining, right, Dad? We had one of them little pop-up tents, and yeah, and we barely fit in it. And I got pretty bored come 10 o'clock or so. So I said to Dad, I'm going to take a walk. There was, again, where we were hunting, and what I find is so successful in our turkey woods, and it's kind of the way it is in all, is it's not just one big piece of bush. It's little fingers and little pieces of bush divided up by a bunch of fields and nothing around. So it's just field, and then like a fence row, and then field, and then I don't know, about 30, 40, 50 yards of woods, and then a field. And so that is today we hunt a different setup, but it's the same look and the same feel of woods versus field. And so to me, that's the success part. That's what the turkey's like. They can roam in between the woods, check the fields. So I said to Dad, I'm going to go take a look at some of these fields behind us. And so I stepped out and looked back, and sure enough, at like 1,000 yards, there's one crossing way back the back field behind us on the other, around the corner of the woods we were sitting against. And I mean, it sees you at 800 yards, 1,000 yards, and it starts to run. I could just see a black speck zoom across the back of the field. And I'm, great, there goes that one. So I went up beside us where I believe I had shot my turkey, and I went up into this field, and it was really tall grass. And I don't think it was like a ragweed, but it was grass, and it come run down to a creek. And so I came up from the creek and into that tall grass, and I got down, and I was kind of crawling through the grass because there was this field where I knew turkeys would hang out. And I look up, and sure enough, there's a hen. And so I'm watching. Well, next thing I know, I could see just on the other side of this roll, there's a tom coming to that hen. Well, hot dog, there's a hen and a tom, and they're out there in the field. That tom's not going to bother looking at us. So I quickly snuck back down, crawled through the grass back, and got Dad and said, you got to come with me. And I mean, it was 1,000 yards away, but get Dad moving, get him out of the tent, and get him up there. Well, we get to the edge of that grass and get down on our hands and knees and start crawling through the grass to get to the edge. And we just keep looking up over that grass. Well, as I'm looking, I could see, okay, there's the hen. So I said, I'm just going to lay down. I couldn't take it anymore. I was getting tired sitting there on my knees looking. So I thought, I'm not going to get a shot anyway. So I'm just going to lay down in this tall grass. And we were not 5 yards off the edge of that field, but they were at the other end of this field along the woods. And so I said to Dad, I'm just going to call lightly, and you let me know if it works or doesn't work. And so I'm laying down, and I'm just got the mouth call in, and I'm just, and he's, oh yeah, the hen's coming closer. The hen's coming closer. And okay, so I got up and look, oh yeah, it's halfway down the field, and the tom's kind of following behind it, keeps puffing up. So I, and I would just every now and then give a little, keep it interested. Well, the last time he's, oh, it's right here. Well, when I went up to look, Dad took his hand and put it on me and pushed me into the ground so hard, because I was coming up off my belly and I wanted to look out and see. And that hen was so close, he just went bam and pushed me down. I think the wind knocked, almost blew my mouth call like a bullet out into the field. It blew. Down I go on the ground. I thought, what the heck? And I just happened to look up, and with his hand on my back, and he's on his knees and his gun in his other, and that hen ran by me at not a yard off my end of my nose. I could have grabbed her legs if I was quick enough. And no, she way. Came through that grass, whoom, right by us. And holy geez. And I just kind of rolled my eyes up, and I could see Dad's gun barrel right there. Well, next thing I know, there's the tom, not 3-4 yards. Kaboom! And down it goes. Like literally not 3 yards off the end of his barrel. And it was right there. And I could not believe all of that just transpired that fast. Go back, grab Dad, come back. I mean, we weren't in the grass 10-15 minutes of me laying there calling and having that hen getting close. And then when I look up, she came booking it by me. And I right, like, could have kicked me in the face. And then all of a sudden to see that Tom right there, like 3 yards. And I'm thinking, I said to Dad afterwards, I don't know if you remember this, Dad, but I thought, well, do you know the odds of missing that Tom at that close when you're...
I remember that.
You said, yeah.
You said to me, like, how did you hit that? I said, you told me, you said, I was so afraid you were going to miss that bird at that range because you wouldn't have had no pattern. I said, never even occurred to me. He was there. I put it at the base of his neck and he went down. That was it. Never occurred to me to miss. Instinct just took over and he was dead.
He didn't waste any meat then if it was no pattern and that close.
No, that was my first bird.
It had to be like a fist coming out the end of his gun. I thought, man, that pattern ain't developed or nothing. I'm thinking, holy, no. The odds of missing that bird when he pulled that trigger were going to be pretty incredible. Because, I mean, three yards off the end of your barrel, if that, that's a tight pattern coming out of a super full turkey choke, man.
For a while, they were just moving slow. The hen was coming down the fence row. We were right in the corner, and it was coming down the fence row. And when the hen moved, the tom moved. And then I would just sneak a peek through the bushes there or through the weeds. And then all of a sudden, the hen was running down the fence row with the tom was chasing her. And when it got to the corner, it got so close, the weeds were so tall, I lost sight. So I had to stretch up. And when I stretched up, there it was. There was the hen 10 yards coming right through the weeds. And that was when you wanted to stretch up and look too. And I thought, nope, not now. You're going to go right up in front of me.
No warning. Thump into the ground.
Push you down. And that hen ran right by us in the weeds, and that tom was right behind us. And all he saw was the end of my barrel. When his neck came out through those weeds, that was it. Game over.
But it is funny, though, when you see these guys on those scoot and shoot or decoys, whatever they are, and they get so close and they miss. And everybody's like, well, how could you possibly have missed that bird?
Yeah.
And your point is extremely valid. Well, there's no pattern.
Yeah, your pattern's not even close to being developed, right? Like, it's coming
it's
out the
12
end.
Gauge. Yeah. It's the wad. Yeah. This is the shape of the wad, and that's it.
Yep, coming out in a string, right? It's a long long string, the width of your barrel coming out that sucker, the circumference of your barrel at that close. Yeah, and everybody's rolling like super full turkey chokes because you don't know how far of a shot you're going to have to take, right? So.
Yeah. 3 yards is not a long shot, just in case anybody's running.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah. It was exciting, man. I'll tell you what. But, yeah, both of those stories in the same spot. And it could have even been the same Tom because it was the same fence row. It was just the other side of the fence row, the other field over, right? So, and but to get Dad to sneak through those weeds and get up there like that, it was pretty cool.
Did he gobble all his way in?
No, I don't even think he made a sound. Never even heard a gobble. Yep.
Oh, that would have been cool. Because he was gobbling the whole way in. Well, I guess not if you didn't hear him or
nope.
He needed to be pushed into the ground.
Yeah, no. And didn't even know he was there, right? Like when I first looked in the field, I just seen the hen. I never heard the guy was going to check it out. He never gobbled. I don't even know if we heard a gobble all morning. I mean, we've had that. I remember that same field. I know I'm telling stories like crazy now, but I remember that we moved the tent over on that fence row at another time. And I remember going for a walk and leaving Dad in the tent. And one came right up beside the tent and gobbled in his face at the window and then took off running. I was coming down the pathway and it ran by me. There was I was on a deer run and there was another deer run 20 yards over along the edge of that fence row. And it came right ripping down through that. And it was so thick. I could only see the red. And I mean, its head was red and it went running right on by me. I couldn't even get the gun up, get a shot. It was so thick from me to him 20 yards from deer run to deer run. But yeah, but
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that woods was pretty. We don't make that drive anymore. I mean, 45-50 minute drive, and then oh my gosh, the walk in. That was a long walk in across that field to get back in there. Oh, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I think that about
was a
it 40 now
40 minute walk in.
Yeah, we got turkey chaser now, make it a little more easy, but my gosh, we're spoiled where we are now, I guess. But yeah, no, we've had some pretty cool stories that way. But who wants to go next? Bill?
I can go next. Yeah, I guess I can go next. I've been listening to a bunch of turkey hunting stories. Maybe I'll switch it up and tell you. First time I went moose hunting up in Geraldton.
Yeah.
That'd be a story for this neat experience deal. So we got, you know, in, I think it was 2015. We finally decided to get a little group together. BP, myself, and a couple other guys from the rodeo decided we'd get a moose hunting group together and apply for tags. And back then, you know, things have changed over the last 5 years, to be honest with you, but the odds of getting a tag were much better. So, but they were much better if you went for the bow hunt. And we decided as a group that we would take the longbows and or the compounds and go up to Geraldton, which from my house is a 16-hour drive north. So you can hunt moose a lot closer, but the odds of getting tags we found were less than if you travel a little bit further north. So yeah,
right.
So with that, I was fortunate enough to draw a cow tag for bull. And we actually had a bull tag too. So for the four of us that went up that were hunting, we had a cow tag and a bull tag, which to me, I thought was awesome for the first time ever getting the opportunity to go moose hunting. You actually have an opportunity to shoot a calf then, a cow or a bull. So I won't get into all the particulars of how that the draw works and stuff because it's kind of convoluted and I'm not really too sure I understand it completely. But pool A, pool B, blah blah. So, anyways, we got two tags and way away north we went. So after last rodeo of the year, was over and done with, we jumped in Peepy's truck and went up north. And this again is the first time I ever went moose hunting, so I really didn't have a ton of idea what we were doing, but we went up there and the first couple of days we spent scouting and we found that we had more fun, to be honest with you, partridge hunting up there because they're not smart when you're that far north. So the bush chickens that would be on just off the road or the ATV trail and you'd see them walk into the bush and you're able to harvest with the compound enough to fill the frying pan and to have a nice little feed. So that was kind of the mainstay activity for the first day and a bit. So which goes into the next part of the story, which was unbelievable for me. We're walking along, BP and I, and scoping out this bush. We took the aerial map out or the topographical map out and we're looking and said, okay, maybe tomorrow we'll drive up this logging trail and come into this lake, through this trail that seems to be quite evident on the map. And sure enough, we get up early in the morning, take the 25-minute drive up the logging trail, get in just after first light comes. We sit for a bit, do a little bit of calling. Nothing comes out. And so we decided to go for a walk to where this lake was that we thought. And we get down the trail a little ways, and all of a sudden I start to see tracks, moose tracks now. And these moose tracks are coming from where we're going to the direction we were, which is kind of odd. But, you know, I said to PP, I said, let's follow these tracks backwards and see if we can set up a spot for maybe this afternoon where we're finding that they're coming to or there's bedding areas. We don't know how to hunt moose relative to how we hunted deer, right? So,
which I would do the same, right? Like I would go, okay, this is because yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, we find some tracks that look relatively fresh because it was, you know, a frosty morning that the frost had melted off at that point by the time we got up and gone, and they looked like they were fresh enough that if we'd followed them backwards, maybe just maybe we'd see something that was moving. So where it was moving from. So we get looking down and we take another 15-20 steps and there's a pile of moose scat and you know it looks pretty fresh and it's kind of odd. I don't hear anything, see anything. And Peepy and I are looking at each other and down at the ground the moose tracks. Well, off to my left, all of a sudden out of the bush comes a moose. And this cow moose takes two steps out into the clearing and she's just standing there looking at us. Well, we were thinking we're on a little bit of a partridge hunt here, trying to learn how to moose hunt. I have a cow tag in my pocket and all of a sudden this moose steps out into the clearing. Well, I'm looking, and it's off to my left, which means that it's my shot, because Peepy looking at me, his shot would be back down the trail where we were coming from. And Peepy and I kind of look at each other and say, holy smokes, there's a cow. She's standing right there. And I'm like, okay. So I had my rangefinder on a little device on my arm, which had like a drawstring on it, so you could retract it, so you didn't have to go looking in your pockets for it. And I was thinking ahead for that. But I said, Peepy, how far do you think she is? He says, well, I don't know, maybe about 50 yards. And I'm like, well, I don't think so. And I grabbed the rangefinder off my arm. And he says, I don't think you've got time for that. And I said, well, I got to know. I got to know. So I looked, and 72 yards is how far that moose was. And a moose is a big target.
So it's looking, it was probably looking 10 yards because it's so freaking huge, right?
Yeah, it was a big target. He thought it was 50. I ranged it at 72 yards, and up the summer, we were doing a 3D practice on a range right around the corner from the house. So, you know, we were taking 70, 80 yard shots with the bow, and I knew I was dialed in. I was able to go. The last pin on my sights was the 70 yard pin, and I put up, and I thought I was right dead center on where I thought the heart was going to be, and I let fly, and that arrow goes, and the almost guy kicks in, and it goes right underneath that moose's belly.
I was waiting. I'm holding my breath this whole time because you didn't spoiler alert it, but I'm going, wait, did he actually get this one?
At 72 yards, and I said to Pete, I smoked it. He says, no, you did not. I said, no, I watched that arrow go, and he says, you were perfect, left or right, you couldn't have been any more perfect. But that arrow, when I let go, I must have dropped my arm, and at 70 plus yards with a compound, it does not take much, and that arrow sailed right underneath that moose. I was sick. I'm still sick. I'm telling this story, and I can feel sick to my stomach at the fact that moose just got a target the size of a Volkswagen, and I launched that arrow right underneath that moose.
But okay, so what were you using? What was your bow?
I had a Hoyt Vectrex.
I know it. Did it have Vectrex? Is that around the 75th anniversary time with the medallion in the handle?
No, it was before that. I bought that bow, I don't know, about 17 years ago now. When it first came out, it wasn't the didn't have the medallion in it, but this was a sweet bow. And I still shoot it today. That's how much I love that bow.
No doubt.
Yeah.
So what was the poundage on it?
That's a great question. I don't even know what I was drawing at that point in time. I've changed it a couple times since then, but it was good enough that I was getting ample penetration on the 3D targets out past 70 yards with field point. And I was using, at that time, a fixed blade broadhead. So I wasn't worried about I got a fear about mechanical broadheads not working. So I've always used fixed blades. And I don't know if it was Wasp or a Muzzy that I was using at that time, but oh, it makes me sick thinking about that. Thanks for making me tell that story, buddy.
Dude, you lived up to the almost, guy. Like, you can't ruin that
no,
theory.
No, I can't. I'm still waiting for the t-shirts to come in the mail and we can merchandise this whole almost guy thing. Man. But the best experience, I tell you, I got a few more stories for moose hunting, but I won't tell them now. But that moose hunting trip provided some of the best hunting opportunities going. Like, there was no cell phone reception up there. You're hunting logging roads, crown land, way north, 16 hours north, right, of here. What's there besides nothing? And the moose hunting territory was beautiful up there. I would highly recommend once in a lifetime doing a trip like that, because it just was amazing.
No doubt. I just looked it up, by the way. Hoyt Vectrex 2007.
Is that what it is? 2007.
Yeah. And the 75th anniversary was 2006. Cause I had a Hoyt. I can't even remember what it was, but I bought it the anniversary year. Cause I had the medallion in the bow handle, and it was 2006. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah, and I fell in love with Hoyts at that time too.
Yeah,
and that's all.
I wouldn't shoot anything else right now. I mean, I've looked at the Matthews back in the day.
Yeah, everybody around me here shoots a Matthews. My father-in-law broke the mold and bought a Bowtech, and I was one of the only Hoyts I think around. We used to do a little bit of the 3D stuff, and there wasn't anybody sporting Hoyts back then, and I'd get a little bit of razz, and everybody was a Matthews guy.
I got you back, buddy.
That's right.
Your back.
That's right. I don't know if I like the almost guys having my back, but
maybe you rub off a little bit and I'll become the used to be almost guy.
I think you're there now. These are just all old stories.
The deer hunting stories are pretty good. Where the almost guy has gone away, but the moose hunting, turkey hunting, I need to get this monkey off my back, I think.
Yeah.
Ah. Anyways, there's a story for that was pretty cool.
No doubt. 70 yards having a moose staring you down. See, that would, I'd have been a little nervous on that one. It wasn't even afraid or nothing, eh? Like it just stood there.
She was kind of looking at me trying to figure out what I was, because we weren't moving too much, and obviously pee-pee.
And their sight's not the greatest, so you got that going for you, right?
Yeah. And we probably could have got away with a little bit more, maybe walked up, but as soon as that arrow took flight and it hit the tree behind her, she was not sticking around for shot number two.
Well, there was no way. PP didn't decide to launch one with you?
Well, he knocked an arrow, but again, he was pointing in the opposite direction as we were kind of looking at each other.
You didn't want to move too much because there it is. Yeah, okay.
No, and I think that, you know, he's pretty good at long range. He practices a lot. So I don't know. So did I. I mean, I'm not making any excuses.
I believe you did.
Shots at that point, but I just chumped the shot, and I wish I didn't. So, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it happens. You know that. You go to these 3D bow shoots, and they got those shots always make me nervous. They got the giant moose at 70 yards, and they've only got the center. It's wood, plywood, and they've only got the center routed out or skill sawed out with the foam behind it where the heart is. And you're like, man, you're shattering arrows if you hit anywhere. That's you're it. Launching, lodging it into that plywood if you don't hit the sweet spot.
But you think, I mean, that target being as big as it is, you know, How even at 70 plus yards, if I had have held it just a little bit higher, I was going for a heart shot, and what I should have done was went for a lung shot. And if I had missed lungs, I would have hit heart. You know what I mean? Like I went for a low percentage shot at 70 plus yards. I've had a lot of time to think about this.
Yeah, I was gonna say. So you've got the regret, the hunting regret thought process kicking. Yeah. We know it well. Where you play it over 52 times, going, if I'd have done this, if I'd have done that, if I'd only done this, that's a whole other podcast. Yeah, so got stories upon stories for that. But it's no different than a deer at 30, 40 yards. Right. So don't beat yourself up. Everybody misses deer with a bow at 30, 40 yards. You don't get every single one. If you do, you ain't hunting. I don't know what you're a machine, but.
So I did the worst thing possible after that is I went back to camp, put the target out at 70 yards and I
drilled it.
Laced the center of the bullseye. Right.
Yeah.
So it's not the bow. It was the operator. That's for darn sure.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So who's up?
Who wants to go next?
I got one.
Hold on. I got to make sure I'm sitting down here.
It's short and sweet.
Yeah, my feet are going to get tired. The introvert is speaking, folks. I hope you're all ready for this. Is the mic turned short up? Sweet. Can you hear him? We don't want to lose this. Okay, sorry, Scotty.
All right, so... Mine is bow hunting for deer. And so there was a guy that I know that was hunting. He's shooting a compound bow and I'm shooting a crossbow. I know Todd's got something to say.
Not me. I got nothing to say about that.
So were you two a couple?
There we go.
Did you hold hands? Did he walk into your tree stand and then go
Okay, only you, my friend. Only you.
We got to take care of our crossbow hunters, folks.
So he's sitting in his tree stand. It was probably a couple days during the week. It'd be a Wednesday, Thursday, and he's working shift work so he can hunt in the evenings. And so he was telling me that there's this deer that walks by a tree in the middle of this field. And this field is huge. It's gigantic. And there's one tree. And so because I shoot a crossbow, he says it's easier for me to go sit under that tree than it is for him. And so he says these things are huge. And I don't know too many people that would give away huge deer. So I take the day, the opportunity. I get off work Friday at 3:30, rush around, get my stuff done, and I run out there to that tree. And I sit there. I'm not even sitting there that long. I don't even know how long.
At this time, Scotty, are you into scent blocking or anything like that, or just camo and a crossbow?
Camo and go.
Camo, crossbow, maybe do your nails a little bit, and then weigh your head.
Absolutely.
They got a shimmer when you put that crossbow up.
Don't be jealous.
So I'm sitting under this tree, and I'm looking at this fence row that divides two big fields, and out comes two huge bucks, two giants. But they're 100 yards away, and there's no way these deer are going to come by this tree. So I was thinking to myself that guy is sitting in his tree stand watching these deer go by this tree.
Thinking they're
really
close.
He can't tell that they're 100 yards past that tree. So the deer, they walk by. They're gone. And I'm like, holy crap, there they go. My heart sinks. I'm feeling like this is over. It's done. I'm not wasting my time. Well, they got about, I don't know, 150, 200 yards away. And one kept going straight and one turned and walked 30 yards to that tree. When it hit 30 yards, I put an arrow right in its side. And then, that makes the story even better, is that it run to a laneway that divides the field, so I didn't have to drag it anywhere. I could just drive up to it.
So it just, how far did it run?
Probably another 125, 150 yards.
I wanted to ask that because I've never been able to ask Bill that question. So
that hurts worse than anything.
We're quarantined, people. I can't get punched.
I will mail that punch your way.
I opened the door, the Pure Later guy cold cocks me one. That was from Bill. anyway, so it ran 100, how many, Scotty? Sorry.
Probably 100 and a quarter, 150 yards, and then it died on just off the laneway that divides the fields, which was great. The hard part to believe is that he watched those deer walk across that field, and they kept doing it. I just cannot believe
on a pattern.
And something that big, I probably would not have told anybody.
No. Right? And so,
absolutely,
except for me. Or dad.
Well, maybe.
Yeah. I'm writing that answer down.
50 chance.
Yeah. I mean, the guy shoots banded geese right out in front of you when it's actually your turn to shoot. But I mean, he'd definitely tell you.
Still going
to shoot
a spike buck, too.
He'd definitely tell you when a giant walks by. Now, I do know, because I got to write that story up for the book. Because that's an Ontario record. I don't know. I'm going to make it the picture for this podcast, but it was 150 something inches, right?
Yeah, it was 159. And then with deductions, I think it was 153.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
The pictures of that thing. It was the antlers don't even look that big in the picture. I mean, they look big because it was just huge body on it too, right?
Maybe I have a picture of that deer hanging in my garage.
I'd see if I can find that picture. Maybe if not,
send
the ticket. Yeah, do that. Send it to me. I'll make that one the actual photo for this podcast, because that is a monster. I mean, Scott's a big dude, and standing beside it, like what, 460 pounds or something, right, buddy? And then standing beside this buck, it makes him look little. I haven't gotten to see anybody lately. The only person I get to chirp is dad, and I'm afraid I'm going to make him cry eventually. I got to get it all out of my system. My wife will give me a black eye in a heartbeat. I start chirping like this.
So I want to know, that second deer that was there, Scotty, bigger or smaller than the one you shot?
Equivalent. I couldn't really say bigger or smaller. It was about the same.
Monsters. Yep. Absolute monsters.
Yeah.
And just outside of town. I know where that spot is. That tree's no longer there, by the way.
Ah, that's saddening.
That tree's been cut down and farmed. Yeah, right on.
Yep.
That's a good story. Awesome, I like that. Well done, yeah, Scotty.
That was a good job there, Scott. And you got it with a crossbow, which makes it just as good. So
yeah, it was awesome.
Just saying. Just, I shoot one of those too, Todd. Just saying.
Don't give me any more ammo. I don't need it right now. I'll keep that in the bank. Well, the only one left to share is Dad. Dad, you got a story?
I can remember back when Scott first started hunting with us, and Scott's got so many great stories, and he's got so many great trophies, and Scott, to me, was always a very successful hunter. I just couldn't believe that he did it alone. He was always by himself. All these stories he tells, he was by himself. He just...
He's a crossbow hunter. I mean, what would you expect?
So is your dad.
Yeah, but he's a senior.
I remember, and I believe it was probably the or one of the first turkey hunts Scott went with us, and you had to go to work. So the plan was we'd take two cars, and you were going to leave for work, and Scott and I, we took a lunch because we were going to hang out there till one of us got a bird, and we were going to sit in the cut. Now I got to tell you, I got to describe this to you how it is. You take a piece of paper and cut that in four sections. Draw a line across the middle both ways, and you got a piece of paper with four corners, right? Four squares. So in the top right-hand square is a woods. The bottom right-hand square is a field. The top left-hand square is a woods. Bottom left-hand square is a field. Or pardon me, it's the other way around. Top left-hand hand corner is a field. Bottom left-hand corner is a woods. So you have like a woods joining in the middle and a field joining in the middle. You follow me? And if you went from that one corner.
So hold on. What you've got is you got two fields divided by a fence row that you're going to sit in with a 10-yard gap to another woods right in front of you. So you got a field on your left, a field on your right. You're on the fence row that divides those two fields. There's a 10-yard gap and then a big set of woods right in front of you.
Yeah. But the one field is the bottom right-hand corner, which we call the south field. The other field's top left-hand corner, we call the north field. And it's the same, the right-hand north woods, left-hand south woods. So it's like, you know, woods joining in the corner and two fields joining in the corner. And there's about a 15-yard cut between them. So we call it the cut. So we're sitting in the south left-hand corner woods on the edge facing the north field. And we can see across that cut, and we can watch both fields. We look to the right and we look to the north. We can see both fields. So we're sitting there, and Scott's got his phone, and he says, okay, legal shooting time. And he tells us, and we're only there about maybe 20, 25 minutes after legal shooting time. And we're calling on the box calls just very frequently, very soft. We heard gobbles first thing in the morning and several woods around us, and then it went silent. Once they come down out of the trees, we didn't hear any more gobbling. So we weren't sure which way they were walking, which way they were going, if any was even going to come to us. So we're sitting there, and then I can look from the one corner of the woods to the other corner of the woods straight across that cut on a diagonal. And I see movement in the woods, and I realize there's a turkey coming. So I said to Scott, bird coming, Scott, out of that corner. And then I saw another one behind it. I said, two coming, Scott. So we're sitting in chairs with tripods. So our guns are on the tripods. The guns are actually up close to our shoulders, so we don't have a lot of movement to do. Well, then we had a hen out in front of us about 10 yards, full-bodied hen, decoy. And when they came out of that woods, the first one was a Jake, but it was a pretty good-sized Jake. It had probably about a 5 or 6-inch beard. Might have even been 7, I'm not sure now. But it was a pretty good-sized Jake. But the one behind it was considerably smaller. Only had about a 4-inch beard, and it was like the big brother and little brother. It was almost like the little brother was just trying to run to keep up the big brother and follow him around. What am I going to do? What are we doing here? And well, the biggest one ran right up to that hen, looked him square in the face, and I said to Scott, I said, hey, if you want that bird, go ahead. Scott says, you're not going to shoot it? I says, no, go ahead, take that bird if you want it. What about the other one? Nope, too small. You want him, shoot him. Well, Scott was already in position. Bam. Scott laid him down. And we both started laughing because that other bird, he went, he spooked. I'm telling you, he went up in the air. He didn't know which way to run. He ran in circles and back in the woods. But I never saw such a smile on my face as Scott sitting there. Like, we're 20 minutes into the season, opening day, and he's got a bird down. And he said to me, he says, I've never shot a bird on opening day before.
Yeah, I never did. Yeah.
Remember that day, Scott?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, well, for sure.
That was even before Todd left. So anyway, I know we ended up eating our lunch right after that. We didn't have, we had a bird down. We were happy. We didn't knew we weren't going to hang around long anyway.
Shocker. You ate your lunch early.
Yeah. Hey, you don't get this size waiting.
Oh, man. Well, I could close it off with a story on that exact same spot. So, because every Sunday for a long while, we all go to church. So every Sunday before church, I'd take my bow before it was gun season. You couldn't hunt. You couldn't use a gun on Sundays. And so I'd grab my bow and take off to that woods. And it's because of the way that Dad described that, where you got woods, field, you know, a finger of woods, big field, woods, and there's another piece of woods over here and over there and everywhere that you could kind of sneak. I would stay 20 yards inside the woods and just watch the fields. And because the turkeys would slowly in the morning come down out of the roost and then filter into the fields. So I'd go sit somewhere first bit and then listen for the gobbles, figure out where they were, and then go watch the woods. And I'd have it where I'd be 20 yards in the woods going from behind tree to behind the tree to behind another tree, sneaking along as these toms would go up and down the field and go back and forth. And I'd be just 20 yards in waiting for them just to get close enough to the edge of the woods so I could put an arrow in one. So I was sitting in the magic corner that we call it, that you've heard us talk about on our other turkey podcast. And I could see across from where Dad just described, they were sitting in the end of this long finger that come out and divided the two fields. And I could see there was a tom and a hen out in there. And so I thought, okay, if I can get across, I mean, I'm thousands of yards away. If I can get across, maybe 1,000 yards away, if I can get across the edge of this field without being seen, across that little 10 yard opening, they can't see me, and come down the edge of that woods, I might be able to get close enough to get a shot. So I went sneaking along, got across that field, got across that little 10 yard cut so they couldn't see me. Okay, I made it without them seeing me. Good. I'm good to go. Come down that edge and I could get close. I'm about 20, maybe 30 yards from that edge, from that opening where you can sit, that kind of is like a little pathway between the two fields where the woods almost meet. And there was a bush that come out, and it would come out about 5 to 7 yards into that field. It's been cut off now and they farm right up to it. But this bush just came out a bit, about 5-7 yards. And so I came up behind that bush and just kneeled down, and I could peek out to the left and I could see the tom and I could see the hen. And I mean, they're still, I'd say 40 yards, 35, 40 yards, just the other side of that opening. And I thought, man, I could put an arrow through them. I got no problem putting an arrow through that tom. They are close enough. So I knocked an arrow. I'm on my knees. And so I would just start to lift my head up over that brush. And I'm thinking, if I just come up over that bush and full draw, then it won't take much. And I'll just put it on them and squeeze off. And so I'd draw my bow on my knees and then slowly start to raise up. Well, as soon as my head would crest the top of that bush, that tom would stop and peg me dead on. And I'd have to slowly sink back down because there's no way I was getting tall enough. So I thought, okay, I'm on my knees. I'll just angle out the other side of this bush to the left of it and see if I could just squeeze one down between. So I'd start to, and soon as my body started to crest the open, the left side of that brush into the open, that tom would peg me and just boom and head up and stare. And I'd have to slowly fade back behind the bush. And I got tired of drawing my bow. And I did this probably 3 or 4 times trying. And if I'd have known now, folks, what I know now, I would have just
kept a crossbow and you wouldn't have had a problem.
Because my boyfriend would have shot it for me. I would have said, I would have just kept slowly rising up because I was already full draw. And yeah, so what? He looked at me, but I was rising slow enough and calm enough that he wouldn't have ran. I don't believe I would have been able to just get that arrow over top of that bush and let it rock. I think I'd have been fine. But I was greener at the time. So I mean, we're going back some serious amount of years. And so I didn't. I faded back down and I'm tired now. I've done this 3-4 times, drawn my bow, I come up off my knees. And so I'm leaning on my bow and my hands across the top of the cams with my chin on my hands. And I'm watching through the brush. The tom comes up and he mates the hen and actually mates her. And I got to see that. And it was, they had walked a little too far away now. And I'm thinking, my gosh, how am I going to get close? So now he's mated. Is he just going to walk away? Is this it? And so it was pretty cool to see. I'd never seen that before, where a tom actually mated the hen right in the field, right in front of me. And now, okay, is he just going to walk away? He's done, right? He doesn't care. But no, he hung out there. And I thought, okay, I'm going to try to draw that hen towards me. Because I remember the story with Dad. You know, the hen came, the tom followed. So I'm calling now, with my mouth call. And sure enough, that hen starts coming. And I'm thinking, oh man, if that hen comes and gets past me, I don't even care what she does, because I'm going to be able to put an arrow through this tom. He's going to keep coming. So that hen come right up and I'm still kneeling on my bow, my hands on my cam. And that she came around that bush and kneeling. So she is eye level and she is not a yard off my face. And she's staring. We are eyeball to eyeball. And all I'm thinking, I'm not moving. And again, I'm in my leafy suit. I got a mask on. But I am not thinking, oh my gosh, please don't peck my eyes out. Please don't peck my eyes out. Please don't peck my eyes out. And she's looking back and forth. And she can't figure out, because I'm pretty close to this bush. I just look like I'm part of that bush. And I'm not moving. And so I'm trying not to blink. And I blink a little. And then she starts to... and starts doing that stupid clucking. And so she kind of quickly moves back. And I thought, oh, that's it. She's gone. She's going to take the tom. And she runs back to the tom. Well, then it wasn't 3 minutes. And she comes right back again. And she stands there again. And she stood right eyeball. I've never been that close to a hen. We're like, we're breathing on each other. And she's looking and trying to figure out what I am. And although, again, I'm thinking, oh, don't peck my eyes out. Don't peck my eyes out. And then she'd run back. And so I finally couldn't do it anymore. They're probably 35 yards. I went full draw and I stood up. Just, whoom. Well, when I stood up, that tom, he was, by then, they were fully aware that something was not right. And the minute I stood up, he took off like a shot and I didn't even get to launch an arrow, but it's still, yeah, I was, I could join your club, Bill, but it was still
membership.
So, I mean, put yourself in that position where you have a wild turkey eyeball level, not a yard. I mean, you're breathing on each other. That close, that is something. It was pretty neat experience. But I think back to, holy crap, darn thing could have ripped me to shreds. Peck my eyes out, who knows what? What would I have
That's
done?
That's pretty cool.
Start swinging an arrow at it. But yeah, I know it was pretty neat.
You ever shot one with the compound?
I don't want to talk about these stories.
Boy, I'm anxious to hear someday. Maybe that's a topic for another podcast. But...
Yeah, it is. I don't know. We got 8 minutes. I might be able to fill in with that story too, but I don't know if we want to ruin it or you want to save it for another day. You tell me. Now I got one prominent story that I can hold or I can tell.
You hold on to that one. Do you got another story that of a success to end this off with a success story?
Oh, with a crazy wild one that you couldn't believe success story.
I can share one 50 years ago.
Yeah.
It's something you guys would probably never experience today. And I know you just wouldn't. Like 50 years ago, like I'm somewhere around 20 years old. And I bought my Browning Satori over and under. I was always impressed with an over and under, and I never had an over and under to hunt with. A friend of mine, Ron, he's passed away now. We hunted 5-6 days a week together. And so I bought my Browning Satori, and I was so thrilled with that gun. And I said, Saturday's going to be my first hunt. And Ron said, well, what are we going to hunt with it? I said, well, I don't know. The first thing, I suppose we should go out and see if we can hunt some rabbits. It was late November. So we went out to the family farm, and we went back in the bush. And sure enough, first off, right off the bat, we put up a rabbit, and I'm dead on with this rabbit. And he says, there you go. First shot, success. You got a rabbit with your brand new gun. And I said, yeah, hey, let's head over to that little cut over there, the fence row, because some quail hang out over there. So we walked over there, and sure enough, we had a covey of quail running ahead of us, a little bit of snow on the ground. They weren't flushing. And I said, let's just walk them down this fence row real careful. I said, you on one side, me on the other. They're going to flush out one side or the other when we come to the end. Sure enough, out they go. A couple on his side, a couple on my side, and I got a pair of quail. I believe Ron got one or two that day, too. I don't remember now. I'm just so excited to get a pair with my new Satori double. So he said, okay, well, let's head back to the car because we'll cut through the pines and see if we can put up a grouse. Fair enough, we put up a rough grouse, and I connect with a rough grouse. Ron says, well, all you need now is a duck. And I said, well, let's go past the car and cut down the creek. Maybe we can flush a nice mallard off the creek. Sure enough, flush a nice mallard drake, and I get a mallard. So I can remember right then taking my, I had my camera with me, put the gun on the ground, put the game out around it, and took a picture, and it's in my album today, Mark, First Hunt with Browning Satori. A grouse, two quail, a rabbit, and a duck.
Oh, man.
That's gone right there.
You're right. Yeah. You'd never have that happen again, would you? Like, they're just, no. You don't see wild quail. You barely see wild grouse around us now.
Even grouse are getting hard to follow. Yeah.
So I've shot as many as three in an afternoon, flush five or six, and get three of them. And used to love hunting grouse, but you just don't see them like you used to.
No.
Oh, I haven't caught quail in forever. And back on the family farm, I could bring you to two or three coveys of quail and get a few of them.
Man.
Just not anymore, right? That's,
no.
That's a pretty neat experience.
That would be pretty cool.
Those are days I wish you could bring back and you guys could experience them because that was all in a few hours. And go home with three different types of birds and a rabbit and take a picture of that. I still enjoy looking at that picture. I still have that Satori too. I had Briley put choke tubes in it and I use it for skeet.
Yep. And you've used it for geese. Yep.
That's a Browning Satori is a good gun. That's what I shoot for trap.
Yes, you do.
That's a good gun.
Right on. Yeah, I think that was some good stories there. Some good story time.
I do too. That was good. Good for getting the dust off the quarantined folks. And
I was able to make some chirpings. Thank you all.
Those are in the bank for later on next time I see you. Let's just put that out there.
What happens during quarantine stays during quarantine, Bill. I can't be held accountable for my actions or comments.
Yeah.
Quarantine crazy.
That's it.
Oh, right on. Well, awesome. All right. Well, till next week.
Till next week. Okay, that'll do it for today. So until next time, on behalf of Redneck Country Podcast, I'm Bill Tom.
I'm Todd Millard. And Scott Goodall?
Nope, I'm good.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to be part of the podcast, by all means, hit us up at podcast@theredneckcountry.com. Again, that's podcast@theredneckcountry.com. And be part of it. Join us and have a blast. I hope you enjoyed it. Sitting around the campfire having some fun.